Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. All right, guys, welcome to the show. We've got Alex Harmon with us today. Alex is president at Tocker Social. First of all, it's great to have you join us today. Thank you for coming on the show. And how are you to kick things off?
Doing great, thanks. Yeah, thanks a lot for having us. We're really happy to be on this show and to talk about Tocker Social. And yeah, it's an exciting time for us at the moment. So excited to share things with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think let's dive into the deep end here. Let's get, in a nutshell, what is Tocker Social? If you could provide that bit of insight for us.
Yeah, so the way we talk about it is it's football with a twist. So Tocker Social is a social experience that you typically go to with a group of friends, but you could also go to it with your family or your colleagues. And you just have to try to picture yourself sipping a cocktail, eating a taco, and with your friends and family, you are together playing a series of really fun and interactive football games that absolutely anyone can do. And so the games that we've developed are sort of merging the physical and virtual world. So they're physical in that a machine delivers a real football to you that you then kick at a target on a big screen. And they're virtual in the sense that the ball that you kick is tracked and it becomes part of the virtual game. So you're doing things like knocking down virtual bricks to score points. You're exploding atoms. There's even a game where you have to kind of hit pictures of your friends' faces to eliminate them and another kind of fun stuff like that. And we've put a lot of effort into our technology and game design to try to make it as accessible as possible. So you really don't have to have played football to play Tocker Social. In fact, it's kind of designed with you in mind if you haven't. You're not going to get sweaty. You don't move around very much. And you can wear whatever clothes you want. And so that's the kind of first part of it, which is the games experience. But alongside that is the food and drink. And now a lot of active entertainment venues have traditionally treated that as a bit of an afterthought. But at Tocker Social, we're trying to kind of turn that traditional assumption on its head and are going way beyond what you would typically expect at an active entertainment venue. So, for example, our head chef trained at one of the world's best restaurants.
Wow.
We've got a dessert room where we've tried to imagine what would happen if Willy Wonka met Snoop Dogg.
Yes.
And it's pretty mad and pretty delicious. And there are kind of lots of little creative touches. But we've got our first venue launching at the O2. In London in a few weeks' time, and so it's an exciting time for us, and I hope you're going to come down and try it.
Oh I definitely will do. Yeah, and oh my god, there's so much I want to talk about, Alex. This is crazy. So, you know, let's let's get into the history of Tocker Social and how did you get here? What's your journey been, and also what was the catalyst to start this?
Well, the original catalyst to start it was a guy called Eddie Lewis, who was one of the first Americans to do well in the Premier League. And I think he came over at 2001. And his big thing was he used a tennis ball machine to practice his touch at the end of every practice.
Right.
And he kind of attributed that as being one of the main kind of catalysts to his career. And so when he retired, I think it was in 2012, he started developing a tennis ball machine for football. And he originally just thought it would be something that his kind of professional playing friends would use. And one thing led to another, and it started getting more widely adopted. And so they opened up some training centers where the ball machine could be used. And so that was the kind of business that I joined 4 or 5 years ago. And we were kind of moving along, rolling it out across the US, and we were bringing it to the UK as well. And one day I was at a conference in America where we'd set up a kind of simple version of the touch trainer system. Sorry, the ball machine is called a touch trainer. We set up a simple version of it and we'd created some kind of basic games that people could play. And we expected just kids to come along. But what we got instead was a kind of really long line of adults and their kids. But everyone had this sort of kind of cheeky smile on their faces where they thought they'd possibly a bit too old to be here, but they kind of wanted to do it anyway.
Yeah.
They wanted to kind of beat their score. So it kind of dawned on me that we might be onto something here, and that we could use what the technology that we'd originally designed just for training, that could be adapted and built on to create a kind of form of football that everyone can do and that everyone can have fun doing. And so kind of really one thing led to another. So we did a few pop-ups back in the UK, again, with a very basic version of the game system where we mixed it with alcohol and we got great feedback from that. And then we've spent the last 3 years developing Toca Social in a kind of more holistic way. So we've developed the technology, we've done about 100 hires, we've done a huge amount of operational planning. And as I mentioned, we're about to be launching.
Wow. And that seems pretty quick, 3 years' time from kind of concept to completion almost. That's really quick, especially when you're developing technology, you know, it's really cutting edge. You know, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, we often joke that Toca years are like dog years. They're sort of, They feel seven times longer than they actually are. When you think that more than a year of the last 3 years has been in a pandemic, I think it is really impressive what the team's achieved and managing to get this all together and on time. And so, it's been a fun journey.
Yeah, I mean, we'll touch upon the pandemic shortly, but I just want to find out what your long-term plans are with Toca and where you can see it, you know, in the years to come.
So we're launching at the O2, as I mentioned, but we're looking also at new sites in all corners of the UK at the moment. So we've got a couple of deals that are pretty advanced at the moment. So hopefully if we were to do this podcast again in a few months' time, I'd be able to announce exactly where they're going to be. Sadly, I can't just now. But ultimately, I think, you know, we think the UK market can probably certainly take dozens of these sites. And it's a market that we feel is great for Toca Social, not just because of the obvious football interests, but also because of, it's one of the places where active entertainment has almost been founded and created. I think Top Golf started out in the UK and we've made a big contribution to social entertainment. It's also no secret that we believe the US would be a great market and we've got a team looking into it quite closely at the moment. The US is a really interesting one because a lot of people don't associate the US with football or soccer, but it's actually a sport that's growing really fast. And it's also a sport that's got a really good gender balance as well. So unfortunately in the UK, although the women's game is growing really fast, it's still growing from a relatively low baseline. But in the US, it's very much a 50-50 sport from the beginning. And that's a great start for us. Also, I think the appetite for social experiences in the US is really high. And that's evidenced by, the success of businesses like Top Golf and bowling and Putt Shack, et cetera, in the US.
Wow. So you're really on like almost at the beginning of this huge incline of, the business. It's going to be massive really, isn't it? It's going to be huge. And I personally would love to come down and play. It's my kind of thing. I'm sure as it is with many other people, around here as well. But you did mention the pandemic briefly before, and every business has suffered to varying degrees during the pandemic. It's been really difficult for a lot of businesses, and I was just wondering if there's been any challenges that you've seen launching a business during this time.
Yeah, there certainly have been, and I think the thing that springs to mind first is really the challenge in building and gluing together teams. So we will have hired over 100 people during the pandemic, which is still going on to all intents and purposes. Until recently, over half of our team had never actually met each other face to face. And we had this like a really weird situation a month or two ago when we started working in closer kind of personal contact to each other, where we realized, hadn't actually seen a lot of the hires face to face yet. And I think, that has consequences for collaboration, for trust levels, for team morale, for mental health, I think is a really sad consequence of the many sad consequences from the pandemic. I think we've had to work really hard to try to overcome these barriers through Zoom as best we can, through sending each other little gift boxes, thoughtful touches, and trying to kind of check in with people as much as we can. But, ultimately there is a limit to what you can achieve through the internet. And so I think that's definitely been a challenge for us. There's also, you know, there's a practical side to it as well. So a lot of our technology is mechanical. And so in the R&D on that, we actually need people to be there in person and to try things out. And we need our partners to come down and meet us in person. And that's obviously been extremely challenging over the last year. We're also doing a pretty major construction project at the moment at the O2. And you may have heard, you know, there are sort of challenges in the supply chain. Yep. And all sorts of labor issues as well. But, you know, I think that aside and taking a step back, I think we've been relatively fortunate compared to many in that, you know, luckily going into the pandemic, we were already set up for remote work. That was something we were already comfortable with. The experience itself, the Toca social experience, is already quite suited for social distancing if we have to do that. So you book with your group, you have your semi-private space, you're relatively segregated from other people. It's quite a large venue and, you know, we're able to kind of get really good airflow through it. So it is an environment that I hope people will feel safe at. And we've also been very lucky that our shareholders have been extremely supportive and, you know, they have chosen to back us to the tune of millions of pounds during the height of the pandemic.
Wow.
And that was because, you know, they had confidence in the vision of what we wanted to achieve and sort of a long-term goal. But so I think we've pulled through it pretty well, but I'm very conscious that many other businesses have had it really hard. And, you know, particularly when you see the kind of uncertainty around government announcements and things like that, you do feel really, really sorry for people who've been hit harder.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in terms of like remote working that we just touched upon and, you know, empowering a team and motivating your workforce, how do you do that? How do you do that in a progressive way and in a thoughtful way, focusing on outputs and not inputs and, you know, treating people as they should be treated? You know, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, I think you just touched upon it. I mean, when you say treating people as they should be treated, I think a big thing for us is treating people like adults.
Yeah.
And trusting them to behave like them. And, you know, I think one of the great things about unintended side effects from remote working being forced on everybody during the pandemic is that companies have been forced to trust their employees. Yeah. to do their jobs to the best of their abilities. We already kind of had that approach. And, you know, something we always say to people is, you know, we don't really care if you want to do your work from a deck chair on a beach in Spain, as long as you do it to the best of your ability. And so, you know, we've always had flexi working. We don't have set working hours. We don't really count holiday days unless, you know, we've got a kind of big reason to do so. And we sort of try to, as an organization, turn away from some of the kind of stuffier, more traditional things that a lot of companies do, particularly the big ones. So, you know, we're not big on job titles. We try to, you know, we accept that some hierarchy is necessary to make effective decisions quickly, but, you know, we don't want to lean into it too much just because a senior person has decided that something they want to do something doesn't mean it's necessarily right and it can't be challenged by someone at any level of the organization. One of the other things that we're trying to do, and I think this links back to the challenges of remote working during the kind of age of Zoom, is to kind of reduce the amount of time we spend in meetings. I think this is something that Elon Musk and Tesla have written quite a lot about, but when you think of the amount of time you spend in meetings that isn't that productive, yeah. And when you've got lots of people on the call and it goes on too long and there isn't a clear agenda and takeaways. So that's something we're really focused on at the moment. And I think in general, we often say, you know, we want business owners and not employees. And to a certain extent, you know, we're able to back that up because we're offering options and shares to people at pretty much all levels of the organization. So that they literally are business owners. But, you know, we treat people like adults and we expect them to behave like them. And I guess it's as simple as that.
Yeah, that seems like quite a unique way to run a business. And it sounds amazing. And you've built such an amazing culture there. And I'm curious to find out where you get inspiration from that. I mean, for that, you mentioned Elon Musk and other leaders. I mean, is that where you kind of get your inspiration from, or is it elsewhere?
Well, it's a bit of it's a bit of kind of, you know, what the likes of Elon Musk do and what other companies do. In fact, for me, it comes from personal experience a bit as well. So I worked at a few companies before joining Toker, and the one before the last one I worked at was more of a kind of traditional corporate, and it was a great business and it was really well run, but you did feel slightly that the emphasis was a bit more on controls, sort of structure and hierarchy. The business was managed a little more with rules, and, you know, for example, the office that I worked in was deathly quiet. There'd be hundreds of people there and you could hear a paper clip drop. Wow. But then immediately before joining Toker, I spent a couple of years at IKEA, which is has a very different type of approach to the kind of traditional big corporate. And so although it is a very big company, it is genuinely very values led. It's very progressive in its outlook. It's pretty trusting of its employees at all levels. It's pretty empowering of their frontline teammates. You know, you really get a sense that everyone at all levels of the organization are kind of are mucking in, are helping out. You know, when they need to do a stock count, you've got the CEO in there counting Billy bookcases as well.
Wow.
And so I kind of thought to myself, if one day I'm running a business, I'd like it to be a little bit more progressive and in the IKEA way than many companies are.
That's a really nice way to run a business, isn't it? Empowering everyone in the business equally almost. And I found, you know, during the pandemic, there's another thing that I've realized is that if everyone's working from home, it kind of levels the playing field a little bit for everybody. And that hierarchy does seem to kind of fragment slightly. Or kind of break down. It kind of breaks down walls. Maybe I'm thinking a little bit too philosophically about this, but do you kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I really agree with you, because often when you look at offices, they're set up in a way that sort of reinforces hierarchy.
Yeah.
You have these like private offices, and you have all these kind of sort of unintentional intimidation techniques with kind of rooms of PAs and stuff. And it's quite nice when you get on Zoom and everyone's got the same pixel size, and and you don't kind of, you're not handing out business cards, and you just got to get on with it, really.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great leveler.
And it makes you realize that, you know, like say the big bosses, they're real people, and it makes the big bosses realize that, you know, people who are maybe juniors in the business are real people, because everyone's just sat in their living room, you know, in their actual real living room where they live. It's crazy, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
It's so true. And I think it's actually really nice seeing a little window into people's lives as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm enjoying your cricket posters behind you and your indoor jungle.
Yeah. But in terms of, you know, design considerations and UX in the hospitality and leisure industry, I mean, what considerations do you have to think of in terms of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think the hospitality and leisure industry as a whole isn't particularly strong in UX. So it's not something that people typically do beyond looking at their websites and the kind of booking process. But we were very conscious when we were developing Toker Social that, you know, it's a new experience for what is to a certain extent a new market. And so, you know, there is some inherent uncertainty in that, and I guess a kind of a little bit of risk about how it's going to be perceived. So we wanted to try and kind of de-risk how the experience would be received from the very beginning. So what we've done is we got a kind of an R&D facility in London, where we've set up a little mini site. And right from the very first prototypes to now the finished products that are ready for launch, we've been doing user testing with hundreds of independent people who've got nothing to do with Toker. They don't even know what they're coming to.
Right.
But we know from their data profiles that they are, you know, they are representative of our target market. And so what this has enabled us to do is to basically use their feedback to inform our development at every stage.
Right.
So what this means is that, you know, when we're coming to launch in a few weeks' time, you know, of course I'm worried about, you know, the finishing touches to the building works, and, you know, are we going to have any unforeseen things? But the one thing I'm not worried about is how the experience is going to be received, because we've already had hundreds of people come through, and we know it's something that people love from all backgrounds, all ages. And as long as we do our jobs right, it's going to be a lot of fun for people. So I would, I'd really encourage other businesses in the hospitality and leisure sector to, particularly ones that are launching, to try to integrate data-driven decision-making into mm-hmm. their development, and to do that at all stages, and not just to see it as a kind of, we create a product that we want, we chuck it out there, and then maybe we do some blind tasting later. And I would encourage people to think more holistically about UX and the power of it.
Yeah. I really like that. And there's something that I often bring up in these recordings, and there's a philosophy that I've heard which a lot of people bring up, which is some leaders never like to be the smartest person in the room. And is that the way you kind of like to kind of work, essentially?
Well, I'm definitely not the smartest person in the room. So whether I like it or not, it is the way we work. I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hiring is so key, and the team that you bring on is just so important for a startup business. And really, the people you bring in the key roles need to be entrepreneurs. They need to act like business owners for their areas. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bit of a cliche that hiring is important. And as I'm sure as a recruitment business, you'll agree with that. If you think, your first five hires, each one of those is 20% of your workforce. And you've really got to get them right. And I remember in the early days, I would interview 60 to 80 candidates per role. I mean,
wow.
Going miles overboard. I remember kind of people laughing at me for it. But do you know what? I'm really glad I did it, because we did get those early hires right. And it's put us in really, really good stead. And a couple of times slightly later on, we got to hold our hands up and say, occasionally we did slightly rush the process, and we didn't always listen to the nagging voices in our head, and did occasionally hire people who weren't totally right for the business. And, it's a big pain trying to correct that. And it's also not great for the people you hire. Mm. So I think it's really important to invest proper time into getting the hires right. But I mean, I'm sure you'll be the first to say that as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And I think to wrap things up, actually, Alex, I've got one final question for you. This is a bit of a curveball question, so it might take you by surprise. So if you can think back to the beginning of this journey 3 years ago, is there anything you wish you were told back then that you've had to since go on and learn the hard way?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There are kind of lots of little tactical things that we've learned along the way. I'd say the kind of biggest general thing that we've learned is that it's really important to keep product and market focus. So, you often read that it's, important as a startup to fail fast. And I think, pivoting does have a time and place, and God knows we've pivoted a couple of times in our history at Toka, and I'm glad we did. Most successful businesses in the world will have pivoted a few times along their journey. But I think the skill is knowing when to pivot and when not to. I think that the danger is that if you pivot too much between strategies, between products, between markets, between ideas, you can sometimes start chasing shiny objects, and you never really give any of your ideas a proper chance. So you do more, but you do it badly. And I think, if we were to be honest with ourselves in the very early years, we probably did lose quite a bit of time chasing the next best idea. And since then, we've learned to have a bit more focus on our core products for our core markets and make sure we really nail that. And I think that, the same can be said of when you get further along and when we've been developing Toka Social as an overall experience. We've really made an effort to focus on what are the main things we've got to get right to make sure our guests have an awesome time. And, it's the games, it's the F&B, it's the overall feel of the space. And if we get those three things right, we know people are going to love it.
Yeah.
And so, but it's really hard, because people come to you with new ideas, and they're often great ideas, and you could be turning away the next big thing. But I think it's really important to have the self-confidence to stick to your guns.
Yeah, that's great advice as well. And, I said that was the last question, but I just want to find out, everyone's, you hear about these startups like Jeff Bezos and stuff like that, starting in their, did he start his company in his garage or something, I don't know. And you hear all these startups start, you know, in the early stages of the business, you know, sitting on their mum's sofa and with a laptop and that's it. And I just want to find out what your life was like in the early stages of Tocker. Was it similar to that or how was it?
Well, it's such a cliche, but it really was. Right. We rented a few desks from another business and we actually took over my parents' garage. Didn't totally tell them what we were doing. They were a bit surprised to come back one day to find we'd basically mocked up a Tocker social box in their garage and had parked their car on the street. I remember one day where we were sort of going around Wix buying up some of their garden furniture walls so that we could kind of create a mini site. And you kind of have to do that because you don't want to burn through resources at the beginning. And yeah. I think as long as I think the one thing you don't want to compromise on is the people you hire, and you don't want to compromise on the product that you're developing. And so we put all of our resources into that at the beginning. And so, and to a certain extent, we still are. And I think it's important to constantly ask yourself, like, is this pound that I'm investing actually going to make the guest's experience better? Or is it kind of, you know, making our own lives as teammates slightly easier? And if it is the latter, then you possibly do have to question whether it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, interesting. And it does sound really exciting, though, starting a business like this and then watching it grow and then seeing where it ends up. It's a really exciting point of your life, I think. I can't say that for you, but it sounds like it's very exciting.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I sort of have to pinch myself going around. I went on a site walk this morning of our venue at the O2 and I was looking around thinking, gosh, it's really happening.
Yeah.
This is... yeah, a few weeks away, and it's really fun.
Wow, amazing. Right, well, I think that's a really nice point to end on. I thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I really can't wait to get down to the first one that opens. I'll be down there as soon as I can. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to following the business, seeing what happens with it, and following its journey. So yeah, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me, and look forward to seeing you at our venue.
Yeah, cool. Cheers. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.